Welcome back to week two in our AP Science Teacher interview series. If you missed last week's conversation with AP Physics teacher Laura Pricer, be sure to go back and give it a listen. Even if you don't teach that specific AP course, she gives such great wisdom in general just for teaching an AP class. And I feel the exact same way about this week's episode with AP Biology teacher Beth Hines. Beth has been teaching biology for 36 years. Everything from middle school to being a TA and undergraduate in college labs as her very first job. She has a BS in biology/microbiology, an MS in biology, and an MED in secondary science education. She's also a national board certified teacher. She has worked for many years in microbiology research and worked for 5 years writing curricula and providing teacher professional development for the Yale Peabody Museum of Natural History. She has such vast experience, and she truly loves helping teachers. You will hear that in this interview. She has taught biology and anatomy and physiology, among other things, in the public school system for close to 20 of her 36 years in the field, and this is currently her third year teaching AP biology. She was selected to be an AP exam reader this upcoming summer, which is also super exciting. In addition, Beth also teaches dual enrollment biology, so she shares in this episode the distinction between AP Bio and dual enrollment, and she also helps to answer the question of how do we get students to take AP Bio when dual enrollment is an option for them, and it kind of feels like more of a sure thing in terms of college credit. After that conversation, we dive deep into all things teaching AP Bio, and Beth just honestly shares so much wisdom and encouragement for how to hold the line of expectation high for your students in order to truly prepare them through this course. She talks about giving yourself all of the grace, not working harder than your students, and serving future you with how you audit your lessons after you've done them. Like I said at the top of this episode, there's just so much in here that is helpful whether you teach AP biology or not. Even for you non-AP science teachers, she shares some goodness here for you, so I hope you will listen to this episode in its entirety. Okay, so now let me just stop gabbing about it and let's just get to it, okay? Here's my interview with AP Bio teacher Beth Hines.
This is Secondary Science Simplified, a podcast for secondary science teachers who want to engage their students and simplify their lives. I'm Rebecca Joyner from It's Not Rocket Science. As a high school science teacher turned curriculum writer, I am passionate about helping other science teachers love their jobs, serve their students, and do it all in only 40 hours a week. Are you ready to rock the time you spend in your classroom and actually have a life outside of it? You are in the right place, teacher friend. Let's get to today's episode.
Hi, Beth. How are you?
Doing great. How are you?
I'm great, and I'm so thrilled to have you because when I reached out to my audience looking for help talking about these AP sciences, one of the main things that came through was people asking questions about AP biology, but also dual credit biology. And so when I saw that you taught both, I was just thrilled because I feel like you're going to be able to help us. We need help.
That's one of those things that people don't understand dual enrollment quite as well. And I think I can clear up that.
Okay, so let's start with, why don't you just tell us, for those who maybe are going to be new to teaching AP Bio in the coming year, or just they may not ever teach it, but just for context, what do you feel like the focus is of the AP Bio course, its major themes, and how is that different from what you see with your dual credit bio class?
Okay, so AP Biology has traditionally been the equivalent of the freshman biology class that you would take as a major. Mm-hmm. And that's the biggest difference because a dual enrollment class, I mean, I don't know if this is completely universal, but it seems to me and people I've talked to that a dual enrollment class is really for non-majors. Mm. And that's how we do it. Like the school that we go through, it's a class for non-majors. So it's a fantastic class because a kid that's going to major in accounting or interior design or English or something like that, they have to take a science class with a lab. And so this is the perfect class for it. Now, as far as the AP biology class goes, that is really going to be for majors. So if you are going to major in science, pre-med, biology, chemistry, you know, any area of healthcare, you know, specialty type science, they're going to want you to take the general freshman biology course. And that's what AP is. So some people will say, you know, well, I don't, you know, my kids don't need to take, you know, I can't decide whether they should take AP or dual enrollment. It's like, well, it really has to do with what do they want to do with it? Because if you take the AP class, you do have to take the exam to get credit. But if you take dual enrollment, and I know this from experience, my own daughter did this to me. Mm-hmm. She took dual enrollment at her high school because she just liked the teacher better. And then she majored in science and we found out, hey, that doesn't really work that way. So she had to go back and take freshman biology.
Okay, that is so helpful because I'm remembering this exact same thing happened to me because at Clemson where I went, there's biology 101 and 102, which is like you said, it's two different mm-hmm. semesters, but it's just for biology for non-biology majors. And then there was biology 110 and 111. I mm-hmm. accidentally took 101, 102, and it was like my junior or senior year before I was about to graduate. And my advisor realized I took the wrong freshman biology and I was a biology major, but somehow like they got it signed off. But you're right. So that's a great distinction to make. And I'm so glad you did that because again, one of the recurring questions I got was teachers having a hard time convincing their students to take AP biology over dual credit because dual credit feels like a sure thing. But that's a great distinction to make.
It is. Yeah. Same issue with us too. We have to be really, really intentional with our kids. And I'm as intentional as I can be, you know, in the first day PowerPoint, if you think you are majoring in science, this is not the class for you. But as far as the content goes, they really are different content too, because the AP biology class since 2019, since the big change, you know, over, big rewrite, they are very much more molecular. And so it's cell biology, molecular biology, as opposed to what me as a, you know, let's say veteran teacher is accustomed to as far as the general, you know, the walking through the kingdoms and the taxonomy, which I still love. I mean, I love all that. Mm. But that is what you're doing in dual enrollment, because that is your basic general biology class, you know, what you would want someone to know that wasn't a major, that was going out in the world to be a productive voting citizen. You know, what do they need to know about biology? And so great classes. And it's just a different, you know, a different mindset for a different specific goal.
That's such a great distinction too, like you said, because I love that concept of thinking dual credit or, you know, bio 101. Yeah, like we're trying to, they need to understand the environment and ecology. They don't need to worry as much about the cell bio stuff, but that is like the most critical for those students going on to do a biology science major or any other, if they're going to go on to be biochem, whatever. So,
oh yeah, it's going to have to be molecular. As much as I, you know, dearly love taxonomy, it's just and marching through the kingdoms. It just is not, that's got to be picked up earlier in biology, because if you're an AP, you got to be prepared for all those upper level biology classes.
Oh, and those are a doozy. Okay, so that's so helpful to start us off. So what would you say then you love about the AP bio, like CED and what the exam has, and maybe what do you not love so much about it?
I am a fan of the CED, the course and exam description guide there. If you are a new AP biology teacher, it is really going to be your playbook. Mm. It's very specific. It's very detailed. It looks like a lot. I can remember, you know, a few years ago when I started teaching AP thinking, I will never remember this. I will never understand this. But now, of course, I do. I mean, just with everything, there's a learning curve. I love that it lays out everything that you need and it lays out the standards. I'm a standards girl. I mean, if you've got standards, like hit them hard. And stay with that. And I even give my kids like the list of the standards and we walk through it and we check them off, you know, as we do them, because I want the kids to see this is what you're expected to know. And we have learned that, we have mastered that. So we, you know, go through and check it off. The CED provides, you know, descriptions and it has some ideas for lessons. If that's all you have, if you're brand new and you're walking in, you know, and that's all you have, I think it's great. After a while, though, sometimes you look back and think, oh, I just wish there were a little more examples here. Mm-hmm. I wish there was a little more detail because there's a lot you have to figure out on your own. So, I mean, it's not a detailed curriculum. It's not definitely not, right. You know, teach this on this day or here's how to teach this concept. I mean, you really have to find those resources yourself.
For sure. But I think you're right. Like, I remember when I first started teaching AP Bio and people would ask me, like, will you ever make, you know, like a cheat sheet summary of the CED? And I was like, no, I feel like you literally need to read it yourself.
Absolutely.
Like, you need to read every page of it. I can't make you a SparkNotes version. Like,
no.
All 100 pages are important.
Yes, it is. It is very important. And like I said, now, you know, this is my third year teaching AP Biology, and I feel very comfortable with the CED. I can flip through it and find exactly what I need. But I think that it may take about that long to really get super comfortable with it. But the first time you see it, you do think, I'll never learn this.
You got to give yourself a lot of grace when you're getting started, for sure.
Absolutely. And I'm really big on giving yourself grace. You do the best that you can do. And there is a Facebook group called National AP Biology Teachers. And they help tremendously. Mm-hmm. And they're really going to say the same thing. You know, don't beat yourself up. You know, wherever you are, you start there. And also give your personal experience. You know, let the kids know, like, I have a varied background in research and in teaching. And so I feel like I bring, you know, a lot to certain topics, and certain topics I just didn't, this wasn't my field.
Right.
So, you know, play to your strengths and don't beat yourself up when you're not as good. There are definitely topics. I just never was an ecologist. That ecology chapter was kind of the hardest for me because it just wasn't my thing.
Well, and ecology is fun when it's ninth grade bio, but then AP bio, and they're making you do all this math, you're like, this isn't fun anymore. Come on.
This is not the ecology I was thinking it was.
Right. Exactly. And I think you're right to just give yourself grace in that this course is covering so many different topics of biology. Like, there's not going to be one person that's going to love or excel at every single one of these. Like, all of us have a lean towards loving evolution or loving heredity or, you know, loving molecular or loving, like you said, ecology or hating it. And so giving yourself grace in that. Now, like I just said, there's so much in this. And I think the resounding theme, I mean, I hear this from every AP discipline, but I feel like especially AP bio, how do you prepare them for the whole exam and the time you have without just assigning hours of homework? Like, I think that used to kind of be the traditional AP route. It's like, if you take AP, you're going to be reading and studying for hours every night. But nowadays, kids are taking 4 or 5 APs at a time. So What advice do you have for getting through it? And also, what are you kind of doing for homework?
Oh, homework is a divisive issue in some districts. Some districts are really opposed to it. Some teachers are opposed to it. I don't like homework for homework's sake.
Right.
I like it to be more, sometimes I'll offer an optional, like, here's an extra set of problems. If you want, you know, Hardy Weinberg,
right?
You either get that or you don't. You know, if you need some extra questions, you know, here's some extra questions. I posted the key. So it's really, you know, low stakes. You can work the problems out and you don't have to raise your hand in class and get it wrong or anything. Mm-hmm. You know, you just check yourself against the key. The class in and of itself is still a lot like that. I mean, it's just a hard class. And I tell my kids at the beginning of the year, this is one of the hardest AP classes. There is a lot of work and a lot of reading. I know what I'm doing. I know what that, you know, I'm showing you what the CED is saying. And, you know, I can't make the class easier for you. I'm not serving you. I'm not doing you any favors. So you're going to, if this class is hard, you're gonna have to step up to me instead of me. Now, again, I'm a very veteran teacher. Maybe that's a, you know, a battle axe teacher kind of mentality, but that's something from the beginning. It's going to be a lot of work. Mm-hmm. And I do have a few kids that drop the class here and there. You know, kids, some kids have a, you know, like a family issue, emergency, or they work, or they feel like, you know, I just can't put that kind of effort into it. But if you do put the effort into it, there's going to be a good reward. The subject matter is vast. It is hard to get through all of the material. I hear teachers all the time say, you know, gosh, the year's almost over and I'm only, you know, a little over halfway through. I think you got to do a lot of backwards planning with that. You got to leave time to review, but then you have to look at the CED and it'll tell you how many days you should spend on each lesson and, like, absolutely spend those days. And then that's it. Mm. Like, plan within those days. And I know there have been times like, if I had another week, we probably could really nail this down, but I don't have another week. Right. I don't even have a snow week. And, you know, so that took a whole week out of my curriculum, but you just got to keep moving. I give assignments in class. Now, fortunately, in my school, we are on the block schedule, and I have it's actually AP Biology the whole year, but it's Honors Biology the first semester and AP Biology the second semester. So I do have a pretty good bit of time. I do.
So you're getting 90 minutes every day all year.
Yeah, 85 minutes. Oh, and I know that's a luxury. I know so many teachers are going to say, "Oh my gosh, well if I had 80 minutes every day." Of course I could get through the material, but.
So when you're saying that, they have not taken like a Bio 1 as a prereq though?
They have taken Bio 1. We have an honors Bio 1. Mostly it's kids that have taken honors or that took regular. This year we piloted pre-AP. And I think that's super helpful. I think that's going to equal kids who are really, really well prepared to come into the class and ready to go. So if you know that they've got the basics down, then I think it can be a little faster for you to get through the curriculum, especially if you really planned ahead and, you know, you have to say, okay, well, I'm going to assume, you know, the basics of meiosis or mitosis, you know,
right.
We're going to move from there. Here's the part that applies to AP biology. And the whole thing of AP biology too is critical thinking. So we have to work on getting past the DOK and Bloom's taxonomy level 1 question. So, you know, I show them, this is a level 1 question. You know, what is mitosis? Well, you're not going to get that. Yes, we got it. We move up to 2 and then, you know, we sit there and then delve into level 3 some. So what I'm saying is you're not helping anybody by giving them, you know, quizzes or activities that are DOK level 1, because that's just not where it's going. You got to start there for a minute and then move to the higher order thinking. As far as preparing them for the exam, I feel like if you will keep your questioning at that level every single thing you do, that they are going to be very much more able to understand the questions. Because AP bio questions, you know, I don't write those questions. The AP College Board does, and they rely on critical thinking. And the kids will say, oh, these questions are so tricky. But not tricky. They're getting at, do you understand the fine difference between this definition and that definition, or this process and that process, or this chemical versus what that chemical does? So it just is what it is. You know, you got to teach them at that level every day. And I know that that's difficult. I know sometimes you think, I look out there and I think, oh, they don't really know this
right, as
deeply as I would like them to do. But you do your best to get them there. And then you really got to move on to the next topic, because otherwise you won't get finished and you'll be at the end and you won't have covered 2 units. I mean, I hear that all the time. Like, well, we never did even get to ecology. Well, that's about, you know, 15 to 18% of the questions that you didn't even get a chance to cover. So look, and I mean, I get it. I get the struggle.
Right. And you have such that is such a gift of time you have. I feel like that's how it was originally intended to be with AP biology, because if students get a 4 or 5 on the exam, they're getting usually 8 hours of credit, you know, 2 different levels of biology, the whole freshman year biology track, which is amazing. So it should be given that time. But like, so many schools don't do that. And some even now are not even having students take like a biology 1. They're just going to AP biology. What do you think about that?
I don't really see how that could be easy
possible
for the teacher at all, or possible for the kids. You would have to be really, really self-motivated, I think, as a student to make that happen. I guess it certainly could be done if you were addressing the lower end of the understanding the basics, you know, because when you get to say 9th grade, you know, when you're taking biology, you've had a little bit here and there in middle school. Maybe, you know, if you can build upon that quickly and get to the higher order thinking, but I don't think that's the best idea. Like I said, my school teaches pre-AP now, and I think that's a wonderful thing. I think I think it's going to be a huge help to kids coming into AP, just having that background.
For those people who have asked that question, I think that's like a conversation you need to have in the counseling department and with admin to be like, do you want kids to actually be successful on this? Because you got to set them up for success.
Yeah.
Like, that is just a crazy setup. Okay. So what about these students who are coming in and like, they're not getting a great foundation? They took the biology 1, but they're coming in and you just feel like they're at a deficit. How much time would you spend trying to catch them up, or would you give them summer work? Do you do summer work for your AP bio class?
Summer work. That's another hot topic. It's a hot topic. Yes, it is. Summer work depends a little bit on your school culture. I've heard of school cultures where they, you know, absolutely, like every subject has to have summer work. And if that's the case, if your school's requiring summer work and you feel like your kids might not be quite prepared, that's an excellent opportunity for you to get some basic, you know, biology concepts underway. Our school culture is not real in favor of summer work, as far as just sort of maybe busy work type summer work. They're not really about that. I think something should be done in the summer. So what I do, this is what I've done in years past, and it's only mildly successful. I had one summer where you had to make a PowerPoint with all of these vocabulary terms. You had to like define it, but then you had to take a selfie or a picture of something related to that within the PowerPoint. And it was for a grade. I had a few kids do it, but not nearly as many as I thought would do it. And so, again, I just think it's part of our school culture. It's just not a big thing. You know, they didn't feel necessarily obligated to do it. The other thing that I did this past year, I asked them to read a book that was either related to the topic, like The Mortal Life of Henrietta Lacks, mm-hmm. or Beak of the Finch, or something like that. What's the name of that? Oh, Your Inner Fish. Mm-hmm. Or a book that would help them with studying. Like one, there's a book called Brain Rules and Atomic Habits. And Atomic Habits turned out to be really popular. Again, I didn't have a vast number of kids take advantage of that, but I think that might have been a little bit of a maturity issue too, because kids, you know, like you didn't have any extra chance to do it. You either did it in the summer or not. And toward the end of the semester, some kids saying, gosh, I wish I'd done that. You know, that would bump my grade up just a little. So then I did something similar between the quarters and I had a whole lot more kids
opt in.
Yeah, pop in. So I think that that's what I'll do is, you know, something that's kind of good for you, like Atomic Habits. It seemed to really resonate with the kids. I think I'll assign something like that. But as far as having a, you know, define these chemical terms and work out these metric system problems, I just don't think that's really necessary or all that helpful or all that likely to be done.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. Okay. So back in terms of preparation, one more kind of question related to that. For any teachers listening who don't teach AP, but maybe they teach honors bio or they teach chemistry, is there anything you wish they would hit harder or do better to prepare students who are going to later walk into your class? Like, for example, I remember when I stepped into teaching AP bio, I immediately went and started teaching Hardy Weinberg in honors bio. I had not covered any calculations in honors bio. And I was like, they need to see this. Like before I have to see them, you know, I don't want this being the first time. So is there anything you would recommend to those teachers?
Yeah, I definitely say the Hardy Weinberg was a good idea. And I believe that the, you know, the pre-AP biology does kind of include some of those mm-hmm. things. I think that's a good one. I think any kind of statistics that you could throw in, because mm-hmm. there are statistical evaluations that you do. And then the need for statistics, why you do it. So like the underlying idea of, you know, scientists use these statistics to see how efficient the experiment was, or, you know, whether you accept or fail to reject the null hypothesis. So I think some of that null hypothesis, CER, claim evidence reasoning, mm-hmm. I think that would be really huge. And I know that in our school, my whole PLC, our whole science department does add that. But if you're not adding that in your basic biology class, definitely do that. It's just the new scientific method, you know, making a claim, providing the evidence and the reasoning or justification. And I think that alone, and I definitely do that in my dual enrollment biology class too, because I think that thinking, that mindset is a really good way to look at any situation you're thinking about. It's like, okay, well, what am I trying to answer here? What's the evidence I have? And what information can I legitimately get from that evidence? So I would say if you are teaching a standard or an honors biology that might feed into AP, definitely hit that. So the statistics are important so that they have some idea. And then, you know, the experimental design and CER.
Yeah, gosh, the statistics, those are killer. And every student is going to have to take, if they go to college, is going to have to take some sort of general stats class. So it's, mm-hmm. that's something I wish I'd hit a bit harder because it just comes up so much in science.
It really does. So that's something I'm really glad to, I try to hit that as much as I can. And I tell the kids, you know, every field you're in is pretty much going to make you take some stats. So
truly. Okay. So we haven't talked about a textbook, but we did kind of mention when we were talking about homework. So do you have a textbook you like? How are you using your textbook? If you do, like, do you make your students read it? How are we getting students to read? We're all just like, what are we doing with textbooks?
Yeah. And textbook is another, you know, hot button topic in AP. Some textbooks are really difficult. So the top of the line, or the one that sort of has usually been considered the gold standard, just because there probably wasn't much else to compare it to, is the Campbell.
Right.
And that's the one that you're mostly going to see in college, you know, freshman biology courses. And so I personally kind of like that because it is an intense book. It's got more than they really need, but it also, you know, it doesn't hurt to learn a little more than you absolutely need to. I ask them to read that just with a reading guide, you know, just an outline of, you know, hey, this is the things in this topic. You know, we won't need to know, you won't need to calculate this part, or you won't need to know this. And the CED, that's another thing of the CED is really good about saying, you don't need to know this. This right. is not within the scope of the course. So I can say, you know, read this topic and here's what you're going to do in the future. So read over that. But other than that, you know, I can't guarantee they read it, but
right.
I do have a guide and that gets a little credit for doing it. So it's not really a homework grade. I call it an EOL, an evidence of learning. Mm-hmm. What I do is I give them an in-class assignment. So we call it a classwork check. So it's not really a quiz. It counts as a classwork grade, but it's going to be over that material. So I don't really have to take up that sheet and see, did you really do that sheet? I can just look at it and say, you know, okay, you know, you get 1 point on the test for your EOL. So mm-hmm. if you did it, you get one test question correct. If you didn't do it, you only lost one test question. So I like that balance between whether or not you really had time. I have almost 100%, you know, adherence to that, though. I have very few kids that don't do that. And then the classwork check is based on what was on that guide. And so I give a couple a week. They count as a classwork grade. It's fairly low stakes, but they do get pretty nervous about it.
Mm-hmm.
I do have some DLK or Bloom's Taxonomy 1 questions on there just because I'm trying to get them to introducing the topic, getting the basic information down. But that way I do that on Schoology on our LMS mm-hmm. and I'm not constantly grading things. I listened to your podcast about savage grading. Teacher Destiny and I were Monique, we were listening to it together in our lunch one day. And she was like, Beth, we've got to be savage about her.
You do if you want to have any sort of life outside of this.
You absolutely do. That was a really, really impactful podcast because if you are really grading literally every single thing, rethink what you're doing because use your LMS as much as you can. Even if you have to get some professional development from your school on all the little tips and tricks, you know, I'm all about learning everything Schoology can do for me.
Mm-hmm.
But because of that, they get, you know, like a short little assessment, a little formative assessment 2, maybe 3 times a week, depending on what's going on. And that kind of keeps them honest.
Well, and it sounds like to me what you're saying is you're telling them, hey, here's extra practice you can do. Here are things you should read and reading guides you should do. But at the end of the day, you're leaving that choice up to them. And I think a lot of teachers that's like the ideal for AP, but it's so hard because their kids are just so apathetic right now. But I feel like what I'm hearing you saying is you just got to hold the line on that. The kids are either going to do it or they're not. And I appreciate you holding the standard. But do you have any other tips for motivating? Like, have you noticed that since it sounds like you've been teaching AP Bio basically since the pandemic? So you don't really remember life doing AP Bio pre-pandemic.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was the pandemic year when I started. The only thing I can say is that, all right, here's a quick story. My son was a math science kid and he took all the math science, you know, AP, and he took AP language. I was like, oh, son, really? I mean, you don't have to take AP everything because he didn't like English. He wasn't going to read a book. You know, he didn't want anything to do with that. And he got a 5 on that test. I'm like, what happened here? I need to know. You got a 5 in the subject that you don't even like. And he said, that teacher from the day we walked in, every word out of her mouth, every assignment, everything was geared toward getting us to a 5. And I just took that with me because now I feel like, you know, I address it every day. So you got to hold the line with the rigor and you got to hold the line with the standards and you got to hold the line with your preparing them. So if you are emphasizing to them every day, we're preparing, you're preparing, you know, you are getting ready to do something hard that will benefit you. But, you know, ultimately it's your choice to do it. And again, I do have kids that drop out. That say, look, this is too intense. You know, I just don't, you know, I thought I wanted to go into med school, but maybe I don't now, you know, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. So I just think the really keeping it to the forefront of their mind that this is, you can't go home and not look at, you know, your homework is to study. So yeah, I try to make it like this is, it's not like you have to fill out this sheet and turn it in because they can cheat on that like crazy, but you have to fill out this sheet so that you know the information because you're going to have an assessment on it when you get in class. So there's little benefit to cheating mm-hmm. and nothing but encouragement to, you know, keep up with the class.
I think that's great. I feel like at the end of the day, it's like I'm going to do everything I can to prepare you for this so you can pass. But worst case scenario, you don't pass, but look at all of the skills you've built. You're going to be so much more successful going into college. I think one of the hardest things for me, my most recent teaching years full time, I did move to a private school. And so there was a lot more of, I'm trying to say this politically, there was a lot more of lowering the bar to accommodate the desires of the families than there was holding the standard. And it hurt me to have so many students come back after college and say, I was so underprepared because we had done that to accommodate the parents' wishes. Whereas I felt like when I taught at a public school, we could be a little bit more ruthless about really holding the bar because this is free education. And then those students though go to college and be like, I was so prepared. Like I even remember I retook AP. I took AP chemistry, passed the test, but then I took chemistry again in college because I had to take that higher level one.
Yeah.
But it was so much, it was so easy because I'd taken AP Chem. So it's like worst case scenario, you don't get the college credit. Who cares? You're going to be so prepared if you do what I'm telling you to do.
Absolutely. I tell kids that all the time. Some teachers, you know, focus on, you know, oh, get that five. And I say, like, your five's a great goal. That's wonderful. But if you don't get that five, then you still have had a wonderful experience in here. And you are so far ahead. I definitely have kids that are not going to make a five or really anything close to it. And they stick with the class. They may even have a C average in the class. But I tell them, you know, a C in this college level class is a good thing. And so when you take that test, you're going to take it anyway, take the test. But then when you get to college and you retake this, you're going to ace it because
Absolutely.
You have good study habits. You know, you studied at the rigor of a college class. Most of this material will come back to you while you're going over it. So yeah, I absolutely recommend kids who are not, you know, not the highest honors, you know, not the 4.0, 5.0 kids, you know, the kids that are just want to learn. And I definitely have some of those. And I treasure those kids too, because they're really learning a lot as far as just how to take a college class. And I feel like they're going to be tremendously well prepared for college. So yeah, that's another thing. Don't make them feel like a five, you know, it's five or nothing, because it's
right.
not.
Absolutely. Okay. So let's talk labs, because the AP bio labs and the lab manual, there's like 13 of them. I think a lot of teachers, it's hard because like in an ideal world, yeah, we would do all of these perfectly, but we have limited time. We have limited resources. Are there any that you think should be a priority? I don't know. What are just your thoughts about the AP bio labs?
The AP bio labs, they seem a little complex sometimes.
They're almost like cerebral. They're not like right. crazy practical to me, but.
Okay. That's exactly what I was trying to say. Yeah. They aren't necessarily as practical, and I don't use as many of the labs directly from the lab manual, and I don't think most teachers do. So, you know, I mentioned the National AP Biology Teachers Group. There's tons and tons of people who will help you and give you some good ideas. They have a repository of free materials that they have on their website, and once you join that site, you're welcome to use those. They have other ideas. There are lots of organizations like Howard Hughes Medical Institute. Mm-hmm. They provide some good labs. You can take any lab and adjust it accordingly too. However much time you have, however much equipment you have, and however much experience you have with that topic, because sometimes you know you just might not be very familiar with a particular topic. So the ones that I think are super critical are, unfortunately, they're the most expensive and the most difficult, and the ones that people might have the least experience with is the molecular labs. I know that my kids came back last year after the AP exam. They said, oh, there was so much on there about those molecular labs. And, you know, I work in a pretty affluent school district. We have a lot of materials and supplies, but I don't have everything. And so we can do some of the genetics labs and then some are kind of simulated. But because I taught in a COVID year, my first year, we also subscribed to Pivot Interactives, which is an online site of that. I love it. Those labs are so good. They have little video clips. So a lot of times we'll do a lab, like they have a lab about the brine shrimp and the algae and stuff. We'll do that. You know, we'll grow some brine shrimp and algae. And of course, it's not going to work that terribly well, but on the Pivot Lab works perfectly. So the kids have got an idea about it, but then they go to that. So I am a big fan of Pivot Labs. They're not really all that terribly expensive to access the site. And I think that they provide a lot of variability. You can make it a little harder. You can give them hints. You can change the number of times that they can attempt it. So you can really customize it to your own student population. As far as simulated labs, there are a few out there. I'm actually hoping to create some of that type of content because some of those labs are things that I've had trouble finding things for. And so I'm working on trying to produce some of those labs, and I'll be publishing those soon on my website. It's called Mitochondriality. We want to be the powerhouse of biology.
I love it.
Yeah. So that is one of the things is labs that you can do with any amount of time, experience. I have a lot of molecular experience. I'm very comfortable, but some people don't have.
Right.
Right. Again, if you were an ecology major, that's just maybe not something you did at all.
No, but I think that's great wisdom. Like you said, go into the Facebook group, find alternatives. You can look at the lab manual and see what they're getting at, and you don't have to do it exactly as it is. And I think, like you said, maybe pick the one and see if your school invests in the kit or whatever you need for the one lab that you're really going to focus on or don't have a great alternative for. Because that's, I had multiple questions come up about people saying, you know, units 4 and 5, the cell stuff, the heredity stuff, not having great labs. Mm-hmm. So that's really great advice.
Right. The equipment that you need is expensive. I'm a big one for grant writing too, you know, and all they can say is no. My school system has an educational foundation we can write grants to, but there's lots of other places, you know, beat the bushes, look and see, you know, who might be able to help you. Even consider sharing with another school. So some of the equipment might be that, you know, if you have a nearby school that teaches AP Bio, you could share the equipment. Mm-hmm. That is a tough one. It really is, because that's fairly expensive, and they are expecting you to do, or at least strongly address that topic.
Right.
Because, you know, last year's questions really hit that hard.
That bacterial transformation, man.
Yeah.
And that one's so hard because of the timing of it. Like it's a tricky lab.
It's a tough lab. It really is.
Those are some great alternatives. Okay. So we kind of already talked about, you know, savage grading, but especially for AP Bio, people, like, what are you having kids turn in for labs? Are you having them keep a lab notebook? Like, that was kind of the tradition for a while. Now people aren't doing that. Are you having them write full reports? I just think, I mean, some people, I don't even know how, you haven't said how many students you have in your class or how many sections, but.
I have 2 sections, and between the 2 sections, I have about 40 students. So, but I've lost a few. I mean, that's a good class size.
Yeah.
I lost a few along the way. I know for a fact next year, enrollment's a little higher. I'll have a little bit higher because I'll have dual enrollment biology with that as too. So I'll have pretty high enrollment next year. There was a time I really thought that, you know, prying that formal lab report out of my cold, dead hands is the only way I would ever give that up. But I have really changed my tune on that. It doesn't feel like that is as emphasized anymore. I do a lot of digital projects with them where I'll emphasize a certain portion, like, for example, the introduction. So like one of the first labs we do is like, I really want the introduction to be really, really thorough. And then, you know, maybe it doesn't have a ton of data to go with it. So definitely, you know, they do the data, but that's not as data driven a lab as, say, the introduction. And the banana lab is the one that I like to do with that, because they, you know, they're just looking for the little starch filled granules, and there's not a ton of data so much. It's a little more qualitative. And then different ones I'll emphasize, you know, obviously if there's a lot of data, we're going to do a chi-square, we're going to do some statistical analysis, and that's going to be the main part. So we've done posters. I'm a lot more interested in them like making a scientific poster, which really is a lot like formal lab report. It's just going to be a lot more applicable to what they are going to see. Because, yeah, I just don't think they turn in a lot of formal lab reports anymore in college. Mm-hmm. You know, according to my daughters, they just really didn't. It was a lot of fill in the blank or digital, you know, kind of things. So, yeah, as far as like turning in a literal, actual typed up, you
right.
know, lab report, I'm just not as much about that.
Right. I remember I just had them keep a lab notebook, but I would spot check it just to make sure they were doing stuff.
Absolutely.
But I was also, you know, absolutely winging it. And I was just trying to, like you said, like every lab was a learning experience for everybody involved. And we mm-hmm. were just trying to learn from it. You mentioned earlier, like we would get trash data and then have to go get the digital one to get something good that then we could do the math with, you know. And mm-hmm. I just think you got to give yourself so much grace teaching these classes.
Absolutely. And don't beat yourself up over that. Getting trash data is more common than not. And
absolutely.
Look, having worked in research, getting trash data in real life That happens all day, every day. That's the norm. Yeah. I mean, if you got nothing but fantastic data that matched your claim every day, everybody would be a scientist because it'd be fulfilling you every day.
Absolutely.
Science is tedious. It takes perseverance.
Absolutely. It's a good skill to practice now. Okay. So how then do you manage? This is also always a big question with AP Bio because it's so much content plus labs plus review. One teacher wrote in and said, you know, I want to get my students practicing more with FRQs, but finding the time between teaching content and labs is a challenge. She said, I use Poggles, which help, but the struggle is real. She said, I always seem to be caught rushing at the end through Unit 7 Evolution, Unit 8 Ecology. I know some teachers put Unit 7 first, but after the COVID pandemic, when AP Board only tested Units 1 through 6, I'm just hesitant to change up the order. And this teacher has 50-minute class periods all year. So basically, you know, 30 to 40 minutes less a day than you do. So just kind of what would be any advice there?
FRQs are hard to get in because they're time consuming. Mm-hmm. The only thing that I could say is that, again, try to hit them like a little bit every day, like maybe not a whole entire FRQ. You know, sometimes I'll just give them one part of it one day, another part another day kind of thing. I try to end the unit with the FRQs, which, I mean, I guess that would kind of go without saying, but toward the end when I'm reviewing, we are reviewing mostly through FRQs. So at the end of the year, like in, you know, like in late April, we're just FRQing every day. That is a tough one, I admit, because they are sometimes labor intensive. Mm-hmm. But I also time them. And again, that's maybe another, you know, savage teacher strategy, that is that they're going to have approximately 10 minutes to do this. We set a 10-minute timer. And I also, I bought these triangular whiteboards, and then we do it in pairs. And so they answer, you know, they do their FRQ, and then they switch and grade each other's FRQs, and then they gallery walk around the room. So I think that's super helpful too, to see the other ways that kids have done it. So like they have 10 minutes to work on it, but then they have, they can walk around and then they can correct theirs. So that's one of the things that I think is super effective. The kids are really used to doing it now because we do it all the time. But it gets them talking and asking questions, and they, I have little post-it notes they can put on there that ask a question, you know, are you sure this is what you meant to say? Or, you know, for every question you have, you got to be respectful, you know, you have to put something nice to you. You have to say, you know, your introduction is really clear, you know, that
right.
Kind
of. Which is also a great life skill to learn. That was some of the first feedback I ever got from a principal I worked under was, he taught me, he said, when you write an email to a parent, I know you're trying to be efficient, but you need a sandwich. Positive critique, positive. And I was like, okay, that was something I wasn't doing. You know, it's good for them to learn that.
Yeah, definitely. So if you have only got 50 minutes, you have to be really, really on top of it. And typically, some of the FRQs are not released for public, you know, so you can't give those for a homework assignment or something. But ones that are released, sometimes I will give them a question and say, all right, this is what's going to be like on your board work tomorrow. Sometimes I do board work. Sometimes I just do a roll call question. And it's just one question. Sometimes it's something fun or personal, you know, and they never really know. So sometimes it's going to be like that FRQ question. So you've given them time to look at it, to think about it. And one of the things, one of the problems I have is getting them to cut it down. Like they'll write this perfect, you know, AP English paragraph. Like, no. We don't write that way in science. You got to be.
Thank you. That was one of my anthems, was like, I want you to answer every question with as few words as possible.
Exactly.
Like when they'd be like, how many words does this research paper, whatever, need to be? I'm like, as little as possible. Like, I don't want to sit here and read your fluff, you know?
Yeah. I don't need a thesis sentence. I don't need a concluding sentence. I need a sentence that tells exactly what the answer is and nothing more.
Well, and I think that timing, if when you're on short on time, I think requiring the time limits is helpful. I used to like to do that even with homework. You know, those questions that are released, say, your homework tonight is to do this FRQ, set a 10-minute timer, do it, come back in. That's where I just check. And AP, I feel like all I do is check for completion, because so much of it is, I want you to just be trained. It's all like, you have to put in the effort. Now we'll come talk about the accuracy of it. And I think for some of those AP kids, they actually, giving them a time limit is a gift for them, because they're such, you know, overachievers, saying, you know, I want you to go do these 20 multiple choice practice problems, but you only give yourself 25 minutes. And that's just what you do. And then we'll talk about it later.
Those classwork checks I told you about, they're timed.
Right. I think that's super wise.
90 seconds per question. And that's it. I mean, of course, I make adjustments, you know, for kids on IEPs or 504s, but,
right.
you know, typically it's, I mean, it's 90 seconds per question. That's what I mean about hitting it hard every day. It's got
every day.
To start on day one with that timing. And I know, believe me, I know some days it's like, I just want to help them. You know, I want to make it a little easier on them today. I want to take a break, but you're just not helping them. You're not doing any favors that way. You gotta stick with the rigor of the AP class. And the rewards, I think, are great at the ends that we've discussed.
You got to push them. Okay, so for your tests, your like unit tests that you're doing, are you writing those questions yourself? I know you said at the beginning, you're like me. I think we just like to use exactly what they give because so much of it is learning the language. But are you doing all of the tests in one class period? You have long periods. Are you splitting it up? Are you doing multiple choice and FRQs? How are you kind of making up your unit test?
I split it up just because that is a little easier on them, you know. And I know the AP test time is going to be long. And I do some practice. You know, some weekends I'll come in with them if they, you know, the handful that want to do it. And we'll practice that. Exam day, you know, they don't really have an exam like between semesters like we did. We took a whole one, but I split it up. So it's two different mindsets. And
that's nice.
Yeah, that's one way that, yes, I definitely should. And I fully support teachers who say, nah, I think it's important to give the multiple choice and the FRQ on the same day. I just don't.
Mm-hmm. You split it up. Okay. Any topics you see students traditionally struggling with, and what do you kind of do to combat those? Or is it just kind of different every year?
Definitely the molecular, you know, unit six is just really hard. I see students really struggle with that. And you were talking about teachers who change up the curriculum. I don't do that either. I teach it straight through. I don't have any reason to think that, you know, College Board would cut it off at, you know, just one through six, but they did that one year. So I totally get that. Some teachers feel like starting out with seven or starting out with eight, you know, like the college might be a little bit easier. I don't necessarily agree with that. I say, and I ask my kids every year, I poll them, you know, all right, so some teachers start out with college. Do you think that was, they're like, no, if you don't start out with that biochemistry that's so hard, then they're not going to understand how hard this class is. Like you have to start with that chapter. So I do, the biochemistry is, it's kind of hard for them. I do have some kids who've taken AP chemistry. I don't know that it's a lot easier because they don't really do biochemistry a lot in there either. So that is just a tough chapter for them as a jumping off place. But then I tell them, you know, when we get way over here, you're going to think that was super easy. And they do, you know, but I think that the biochemistry part at the front end is difficult because they're not used to AP style questions. And I use only AP questions. I never write my own questions.
Same.
Because I would do it so simple. I would give such basic questions.
And then they'd get to the test and be like, this is insane. So
they're asking, you know, what they're asking crazy questions here. You know, I give 100% questions from the AP. And, you know, I don't let them out. We do it on Schoology. I keep it closed. The classwork questions are the only ones. I use questions from the textbook on that. And a lot of these questions are out there. I mean, if you have kids that are going to go to the trouble to search out all these questions, I'm just philosophical about that. It's like, well, you know, I mean, there's number one, they're studying. Number two, there's hundreds of questions. They can't memorize them all. If they're studying to the point where they remember and understand these questions, they understand the material.
Right. And that's, I'm kind of with you at this point. Obviously, don't be ignorant, but at the same time, cheaters are going to cheat. I've said it 1,000 times. Like, you cannot prevent these kids. They are scrappier. They are more tech savvy than us. So at the end of the day, you're, like you said, you just got to serve the students that are going to do the work themselves, and just the rest will fall into place eventually, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Something we haven't even talked about. I can't believe I brought it up, is you as an AP reader.
Oh yeah. No, I haven't done it yet. I'm doing it this summer.
That's exciting. But I don't know if they've given you any training or what that's going to look like, but I feel like it gives you a little edge being an AP reader. But any insight you have now that you're into that, or just in general, what are you doing for reviewing for the exam? Kind of what do you think is best to use that review time for?
I'm super excited about being a reader because I think that that is going to help me tremendously in understanding and understanding better. And as time goes on, I feel like I do understand better the way they ask questions, but I just feel like I'm going to get a lot more insight. And I think it's going to, you know, help in my classes tremendously. So I am super excited about that. Reviewing, there is a teacher who provides a lot of review materials. It's AP Biology Penguins. Her name is Tiffany Jones, and she's awesome, and she gives out a lot of wonderful information. But AP Bio Penguins is her Insta page, and she has all kinds of reviews. I send my kids there all the time until then. We call her the Penguin Lady. She provides a lot in the way of reviews. AP provides review videos and the notes that I have where the, you know, where the kids check off the standards. Mm-hmm. She has provided some questions, some practice FRQs, things like that. So the kids work on those. I mean, some kids come up and show me work they've done, ask me questions. Mm-hmm. Some probably haven't done it, but we are going over those. So I'm actually finishing unit 7 right now, and 8 usually goes pretty quickly for me. And it's, you know, mid-March at this time that we're talking. So I will get finished with 8 and have plenty of time for mainly FRQ practice, because that is where I feel like the kids need the most amount of practice. But there are resources out there. I tell the kids to keep those packets and like work that packet really, really hard, like really intensely with all the notes they possibly can, even page numbers from the textbook, things like that, and then keep it. And that's a gift to their future selves, mm-hmm. because then when it's time to review, you're going back over and you're reading your own notes, you're reading your own definitions, you know, how you answer the question, you're looking at the page number and say, oh yeah, that was on this page. I can go back. I barely remember this topic. Let me go mm-hmm. back and, you know, refresh my memory on that. So during this time, we have a lot of testing going on. So sometimes I don't see the kids all day, you know, different times. So that's a really good way for them to have that stack of review papers that they can work on their own.
Right.
You can lead a student to water, but you can't make them think.
I think that's like truly the theme of this. And for these AP teachers, I think so much of us are trying way harder than our students are. And at some point, you just got to stop doing that. You know, you can't take the exam for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You don't need to work harder than they are.
Absolutely. Okay. So what advice would you give that teacher we're recording mid-March. This will come out though early April. So a lot of times it's contract season. So people are finding out, like, I'm teaching AP Biology. What would kind of be your advice for that new to AP Biology?
Download the CED, download the labs, look over them. Start getting used to the terminology, you know, make sure that you understand the four big ideas, and then they have, you know, subheadings, and then they even have essential knowledge. So they have like, this is exactly what we need you to know. So start looking at that. I would say start with what's your favorite or what you're most, you know, experienced in, because you're going to retain that the most. You're going to understand that one the best. And then if there's a particular topic you're not crazy about or isn't your high area of interest, you know, take a look at that a little bit later. Get yourself mm-hmm. some confidence and some experience under your belt before you necessarily go to that one. I'd say join that AP group on Facebook because they are super, super helpful and kind and funny and, you know, super helpful. I could not have done this without asking questions and other mm-hmm. people's questions. And it's so funny. I'll have a question. I'll be, oh, I don't know. You know, I don't know what I'm going to do about this. And I'll open Facebook and someone will say, hey, what am I supposed to do about this? It'll be the exact question.
Well, and that's the beauty of going in the same order, too, because you're all kind of struggling through it at the same time. Yeah, I'll link all those, that group and everything you mentioned in the show notes, because those are helpful. What about for like the teacher who's just so nervous about the content? Do you have any one you recommend or any books or videos for kind of refreshing themselves in the content?
Well, the Bozeman videos are fantastic for AP Biology, and I learn a lot. I think that they're really good for reviewing. So some of the topics that I didn't really remember, like when I first looked at it, I was like, Hardy Weinberg, I barely remember what that even is. Mm-hmm. So like I went back and watched that. I was like, okay, all right, yeah, I recall that in the one ecology class I mm-hmm. took. So I would say, you know, get a copy of the textbook, see what your textbook, there are other textbooks. There are ones that are aligned specifically for AP, and they are not as complex as Campbell. Mm-hmm. If your school has gotten one of those books, you know, go through and make sure you understand the basic material. And again, you can look up something. And even still, I'm always looking up something, you know, like CRISPR's not really in there, but I looked up just some information about CRISPR so that we could talk about it, because I feel like if you're going to study molecular biology, you know, go to that topic. Mm-hmm. But you know, the topics that interest you, the topics that you feel like I'm not super prepared for, find whatever resources you can to help build up your content. So I mean, I can't really necessarily name a specific book, but I will say I did buy some textbooks off Thrift Books, you know, that mm-hmm. were on, like, I bought one on ecology, I bought one on biology and stuff, just to see what the college level texts are talking about. And sometimes I try to throw in things that the kids will be studying later. Like if you're, you know, if you're going to take a upper level cell biology class, you're going to actually study this.
Right.
I like that, to give them some direction. I got an organic chemistry book too, because that's one where I know
Chris,
the worst. I got an organic chemistry book so that they could see what organic chemistry was, and you know, with that first part of the year. So I want them to feel like I have their back. Like I'm, you know, I know what their struggles are. I know what their strengths and weaknesses might be, and you know, I try to give them every opportunity But if you're a teacher and you feel like the content, you know, might be something you've had a million years ago and you're nervous, definitely make the effort and reach out to those people who will help you. I definitely will help, you know, anybody that wants to email me, especially if you just need, like, my love language is words of affirmation. And sometimes I just need somebody to say, you know, Ms. Hines, you're doing a good job, because you just work day in and day out and you just really are struggling getting this stuff out of the kids. And every so often, you know, somebody just needs to say, yeah, I think you're doing this well. So yeah, if you need that, email me. I'll give you some words of affirmation.
Exactly. I'm going to put your email in the show notes. And we're going to put your website and all that once you get it all up and going, if it's not ready by the time this airs. But I agree. Like, I just feel like I've never been more humbled than when I taught this, but in a good way. And then also just, I was a scrappy, like, scavenger. Like, I was just, not one thing that I did teach AP Biology was like an original thought or an original resource. Because people always ask me, will I ever make AP Biology resources? I said, absolutely not. I was just a leech, like, taking everyone else's stuff, mm-hmm. because you just kind of have to survive. And if you can get to one of those summer institutes, they will give you so much free stuff. And I remember all those textbook companies, they were all there and they were giving us all free teacher books so that we would hopefully buy their books, and they let us keep them all. And so I had like 5 different AP textbooks that I could use, mm-hmm. and it was great. You know, like, I think getting that was like a non-negotiable for me, was getting to one of those.
Yeah. I was in a COVID year, so I had to do it virtually.
That's not the same.
It's not the same, but it was still wonderful. It was
okay, good.
I don't think you were allowed to teach AP without having an APC, having gone through one.
Apparently back in the day, but I think now they don't make you, which is insane.
That APC is going to be a game changer for you. So as you're talking to somebody who's an expert, you know, in AP biology, the last one, and I actually took a second one, because we have a group in Tennessee where I live that gives out grants to teachers to take APCs. They do online AP classes for kids in really rural areas or areas where they don't even have an AP teacher for a subject. And they were giving grants. And so I did a second one, and it was just as powerful. It was, but
seriously,
the guy that ran it, like, writes some of the questions. He's a botanist, and he said, yeah, if there's a plant question on there, you can guarantee I wrote that question. And
that was, my teacher was someone who was a part of the rewrite of the CED. So she was like just such an expert. And yeah, you're just going to get such a wealth of knowledge there. It's just a game changer.
I can't even emphasize enough how critically important that is, and how much information that you get out of that that will help you. And don't, if you're a teacher that's having to pull resources from everywhere and you don't feel like you're creating something original, don't beat yourself up for that. I mean, that's not even a thing.
It's not even a prerequisite to be a teacher.
No, you can be
a content curator, and then you can be a teacher.
Yeah. So see, that's kind of where I am with starting this business, is like, I see the need for some of these AP biology resources that I feel like I can. I'm to the point where I feel like I can write some original things. So some of the original things I do in class, you know, that I've sort of started doing, I'm planning to write up and, you know, hopefully share with other teachers. I did work in teacher professional development for a while, and I loved that. I love helping other teachers. I love providing resources. I love going into the classrooms and, you know, helping the teacher with the materials. So that's something I really hope to be able to do more of in the future.
Well, and I'm so excited to share your stuff when you have it all finalized. So definitely share that with us. But before I let you go, I always like to ask one last question, since this is the Secondary Science Simplified podcast. And that would be, what's one way that you've simplified your life recently?
Well, I mentioned with the kids about giving a gift to your future self. And I use that a lot. And I use it with myself too. So my advice is, give a gift to your future self. But in that, when you are doing a unit and something goes well or goes a little bit wrong, or you think you should do it differently next year, like, document that immediately.
Yes.
So I have digital files, but then I also have like a file folder. And I have mine divided by, you know, by topic. And then so for each one, I can put in there, this lab takes longer than you think.
Yes.
Because that happens. That would happen to me all the time. I'd pull out, you know, I'd get started. And I'm like, oh, that's right. Dang it. It took a day and a half last year. So do that. You know, keep up with all of those things. Keep it organized. Keep it efficient. And I know that's a lot on the front end, but there's a lot of things that you can do on the front end that are a gift. And one of them is your board work. Like, if you keep it on your LMS, like, you make it once and then you don't have to make it again. So I make these classwork assignments, you know, I make it once, I just pull them up for the next year. But then I have to, you know, I have the note, I have a copy of that, and I have written on there, question 7 is a little difficult, you know, give them some hints or be prepared for a lot of questions.
For future you. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Gift your future self. So
you think you're going to remember and you just don't.
No, you do not.
And I also loved I loved when I would pull up a lab and I would see that past me had like saved the data from the previous year, just in case, like you said, there's a snow day, or for us, there's a hurricane day. And it's like, oh, well, we didn't get to finish and now our bacteria is moldy, but at least I saved this. Mm-hmm. I am a black trash bag energy type of person, but I can get hoarder-esque when it comes to those things. And I think it's a good thing.
Well, that's another thing too. Like when you've got that folder, don't be a hoarder. Like don't keep everything. Don't keep multiple copies of anything. You're like, but clear it out. Like when I get done with a topic, I'm so done with that topic. I just want it to go away. I want to go to the next one, but stop. Take some time, go through the folder, throw
audit
out
it. Yes.
You know, audit everything that's in it. Sometimes if I've got a kid that did a really good job, before I get that paperback, I'll copy that.
Yes.
And to take their name off of it. But like, here's an exemplar of a kid that really killed this. I ask kids if they do a project that's really good, I keep a couple of them so that you can see. But here's another word of advice that I read years ago, and it sounds so crazy. But don't leave on Friday without everything being ready for Monday.
It's so true.
That's the last thing you want to do on Friday. But if you'll erase your board, write your new standards, you know, clean off the desk, copy your handouts, you will do that on Friday. Then it will make a whole lot of difference in your weekend and your Sunday scaries.
100%. Like to know your Sunday scaries will be so different to know you're at least prepared through Monday, you know, to get you started.
Or at least you've got to start. You don't have to come in and hit the ground with erasing your board quick and writing, you know, putting the new calendar up. You know, you've got that at least handled. So
absolutely. Well, thank you so much for your time, Beth. This has been so helpful and I can't wait to share a conversation.
Awesome. Glad talking to you. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode and my interview with Beth. You can find all links mentioned in the show notes at itsnotrocketscienceclassroom.com/episode125. And if you are listening and you teach AP biology and you've not left a review yet for the podcast, now is your turn. Please leave us a 5-star rating and review. I would love to hear from you. And be sure to tune in next week when we hear from an AP environmental science teacher. All right, teacher friends, that wraps up today's episode. If you're looking for an easy way to start simplifying your life as a secondary science teacher, head to itsnotrocketscienceclassroom.com/challenge to grab your classroom reset challenge. And guess what? It's totally free. Thanks so much for tuning in, and I'll see you here next week. Until then, I'll be rooting for you, teacher friend.